You want a shot at playing in late October? You got to start talking now.
He leaps in the air, makes the throw to first to complete the double play.
The Miami Marlins Hot Stove Show with Kyle Seeloff is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Good to be back. Monday, January 9th. This is the Marlins Hot Stove Show, as always, brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. I'm Kyle Seeloff with you up until 8 o'clock this evening. Our terrific producer, Mike Lekomiak, is with us as well. And very happy New Year to all of you joining us this evening. We are just over 1 month away until pitchers and catchers report. That'll be here before we know it, but a lot to get to before then. A lot of folks to talk to, and very excited about this evening's show. We'll recap the Marlins' winter to date, what remains on Miami's agenda, and we've got two terrific guests. Starting pitcher Tom Kohler will join us in just a couple of minutes. And coming up later, newcomer, reliever, the submariner Brad Ziegler joins the program. So a lot to look forward to this evening. Speaking of looking forward, make sure you get your hands on season tickets. It is the new year. The season is fast approaching. And if you want guaranteed access to the All-Star Game at Marlins Park in 2017, you've got to become a Marlins season ticket holder. So go online, marlins.com/tickets, or give the front office sales representatives a call today at 1-877-MARLINS. In addition, the World Baseball Classic coming to Marlins Park March 9th through the 13th. The ballpark will host first-round action. Some of the World Baseball Classic's top teams' star players from the Dominican Republic will see Robinson Cano, Adrian Beltre, and Manny Machado, a Miami native. From the U.S., Christian Yelich, Max Scherzer, and Andrew McCutchen. Actually, as a matter of fact, I see just earlier this afternoon, Scherzer has been scratched from Team USA. He has some type of microfracture in one of his fingers, so he will not be representing the United States in the World Baseball Classic. Elsewhere, Colombia and Canada will also be at Marlins Park. Jose Quintana, Julio Teheran for Colombia, and Russell Martin, the staple for the Canadians. So go to marlins.com/WBC today. You'll be able to buy ticket strips at a very family-friendly, affordable price. So it'll be a terrific couple of days. It's terrific, terrific baseball. These guys very, very prideful and representing their countries, and they go all out, and that's fun to see at the beginning of March. All right, let's take a quick break. I know that was brief, but coming up next, hang with us, Marlins starting pitcher Tom Kohler, right here on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
When baseball's out of season, we talk about it.
So in a way, baseball's never out of season.
Miami Marlins Hot Stove Show with Kyle Seeloff.
940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Well, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Again, Happy New Year to all of our listeners. We are just 1 month out from the start of spring training. Fast approaching. It'll be here before we know it. So make sure to check back in the coming weeks. As a matter of fact, keep this in mind. More information on the annual Fan Fest at Marlins Park to be held in February. That's where you'll be able to meet all the players, get some autographs, hang out with the guys, and just have a real fun day and evening at Marlins Park. Okay, out to the phone lines, our first guest of the new year. As a matter of fact, he had a terrific 2016. Quite frankly, the ace of the second half of the Marlins, the always reliable Tom Kohler, joining us right here on the Hot Stove Show this evening. Tom, happy new year. How's the family doing? How's the offseason been for you guys?
Hey, happy new year to you, too. I'm honored to be the first guest of 2017. Hopefully I could start this year off right. Season's been good. Been busy.
So before we talk baseball, Tom, my apologies to you, as I know you're a Giants fan, knocked out of the playoffs yesterday. Would you like a minute to air any grievances, any frustrations after the loss?
I have a lot of frustrations, but unfortunately a lot of them are not necessarily geared towards the actual Giants, and much of it is having to listen to different media outlets blaming the boat trip that some of the wide receivers and other players went on Miami on their off day. It's just, you know, if you think that guys are dropping passes because of what they did on Monday afternoon, it's just outrageous. And, you know, but at the same time, if you're going to take a trip like that and your quarterback's hitting you in the chest, you got to catch the ball.
How about the fantasy football team? Who came away a winner? Did I see Miguel Rojas won the fantasy football league?
Yeah. The one guy who probably at the start of the season can name four players in the NFL somehow came away with the fantasy football championship. And If there was a trash-talking champion, he would probably win that too. So I'm not too thrilled to see Miggy come spring training because I just don't want to hear what he has to say. I mean, I've been reading it through text message for the last 4 months, so seeing it in person is going to be pretty unbearable.
Yeah, I didn't foresee Miguel Rojas as a guy that loves the NFL, and he's got himself into fantasy football, but hey, he won. All right, Tom, very good. Let's chat some baseball. You guys will report in just over a month. What's your off-season program look like, and would you attribute what you do in the off-season to your durability come the regular season?
You know, I've been asked that a lot, and I don't know if there really is a true answer to why I'm able to stay durable and on the field. I think I'm fortunate. You know, a lot of guys have little minor injuries that maybe they can't get through. And luckily for me, when the minor injuries come, I find a way to push through it. You know, I work really hard in the offseason, spend a lot of time preparing for, a six-month grind. And, if I was going to sit here and say that every time I go out on the mound, I feel amazing, I'd be lying. You know, there's days where I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out there. But, with the help of the training staff, I find a routine, and with the help of the strength coach and bullpens in between starts and throwing program, I've become very, very routine-oriented, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
30-plus starts the last three seasons. Quite frankly, you've become the model of consistency. With that being said, just how tough is it, and what's it like come the dog days of summer for a starting pitcher?
You know, it's tough. But you have to listen to your body, and you have to listen to those around you, and be able to make adjustments. You know, I'm not gonna lift as much as I do in August as I do in April. It's right. Just not possible. My body doesn't recover as well. The last thing I want to do is do anything in between a start that's gonna hinder my ability out there. Sometimes I learn the hard way, unfortunately, where I push myself a little too hard a couple of days before in the weight room, and then I'm out on the mound, and my legs are sore. And that's usually when I go sit down with Ty Hill, and we're like, all right, it's time to come back and start figuring out what to do from here on out.
How much are you looking forward to getting back with the guys, Tom? Obviously, a very tough end of the season in the worst of ways. I know it really brought you guys together, though.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to the guys this offseason more than I ever have before. Yeah. It's an unfortunate circumstance, and we're bonded by it. So I guess if there's a positive to come out of the situation, it's how close we've all become and how all of us realize you really can't take anything for granted no matter who you are and what situation. You know, we have a big group text that is going around, and guys talk to each other and check in on one another, and that's not just player to player. I mean, I've had phone conversations with several front office members throughout the offseason, just and not baseball related, just how you doing, how you holding up, because, we're all human, and we all had to grieve in a very public fashion.
Right.
And I don't know what it's going to be like the first couple of days in camp. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of emotions brought back up, but hopefully we're all tight enough and have been there for each other through this offseason that it can carry over and, we'll be able to support one another and push through it.
How much does it mean to you guys? And I don't care what the public perception of the organization is. People like you guys, hate you guys, whatever the case may be. But as players, and the way in which the front office has reached out to you guys to make sure you're all right during the offseason, how much has that meant to you guys and maybe even for you personally?
Well, it means a lot. I mean, it humanizes them. Sometimes you look at front office members and you feel like maybe they just view you as, an asset or just a movable piece. But, the human element of the game is something that you can never take away. And, it means a lot to show that they showed how much they cared. And I think the organization did a tremendous job handling the mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. They honored him the best way they could on extremely short notice, and the way David Sampson spoke to the media and basically represented our whole organization was incredible. So, I've gained a lot of respect for all of them. Not that I have any before.
Right.
I don't want to sound like we they have relationships, but I feel like this just brought everybody a lot closer.
Right. Hey, chatting with Adam Conley last month before Christmas time and the holidays and such, he mentioned he didn't pay too much attention to the offseason news and the moves, but rather you were the guy that kind of kept him up to date. We'll chat about the moves the Marlins have made in just a second. But, Tom, do you enjoy following the offseason moves throughout Major League Baseball?
I do. I tell my wife all the time the hot stove period is one of my favorite points of the year. I really enjoy seeing, you know, one, how clubs value other players and how other teams value certain players. And then, you know, like I like trades because I like to see who gets traded for who. And then, you know, the free agent market always interests me because I like seeing what guys are going to get paid. And so I like to follow it. I probably follow it a little bit closer than a lot of other guys do. Mm-hmm. I think everybody follows it in their own way. Like people that say they don't pay attention to it at all, I don't believe them. But I think I'm a little more public with how I follow it. You know, I see Adam every single day, so it's pretty easy for me to just tell him, oh, hey, we signed this guy, or just see what so-and-so got at the free agency, and yeah, we have a little conversation about it. But I think the more knowledgeable you are about different things can only help you moving forward. I mean, I'm not going to be pitching for the rest of my life, so I'd like to I don't know where this game's going to take me, but I'd like to have options.
Well, here's to a decade more of success on the mound, but you sound like a guy that potentially would love to be in a front office and exploring some of those opportunities after baseball.
Yeah, that's something that definitely interested me a few years ago, but I'm not too familiar with a lot of the new sabermetric numbers, and I don't really understand how to value them all. I think some of them are very good, but I haven't fully committed into understanding it, so that would be something that would take time for me. I'm more of a, you know, what do I see with my own eyes, actual quantifiable numbers guy. I don't really care how many runs they're projected to give up. I want to see how many runs they actually give up.
Right.
So that's something I think I would have to learn.
Well, the Marlins have certainly made plenty of moves this winter. Tom, let's get your thoughts on some of them. We'll start with the starting rotation, the additions of Edinson Volquez and Jeff Locke.
I like it. We saw Volquez last year. Actually, both of them last year pitched tremendously against us at Marlins Park. Volquez is a guy who's out there throwing 180 to 200 innings every single year. And, you know, we have a big hole now. A lot of innings need to be filled. So to have him out there, he seems like he hasn't lost any stuff. And for me, anybody I've talked to said he's a great guy and a great teammate. So I'm looking forward to having him. And Locke was an all-star a few years ago. And it's not easy to be an all-star, so hopefully, he can reunite with Jim Benedict and find something that clicks again. He can have an all-star season for us.
Hey, how about the bullpen? Brad Ziegler is actually going to join us in a little bit here on the Hot Stove Show. Brad Ziegler and Zunichi Tozawa to compliment, and I would imagine you would agree, what was a very good bullpen in 2016.
I love the additions. I think it's a great move. Now. You got guys who are familiar pitching in every single spot in the bullpen, whether it's closing, setting up, long man. So, you know, no matter what happens in a game, you're not going to have anybody that's inexperienced out there. It's not going to be if AJ throws 3 days in a row, you're not going to try to fill that closer spot with somebody who's never done it. You have a very, very good plan B, or we'll call it, you know, option A2. Same goes throughout there. You know, if you got a guy that's throwing the seventh inning, starter goes sixth, guy goes into the seventh, you know, no matter who you use for 3 days, you have an A team out there, and I think that was set up perfectly.
Yeah, whether it's Ramos or Ziegler, who has plenty of experience closing, and Tozawa, who was terrific for the Red Sox in the World Series a couple of seasons ago. All right, Tom,
you just add those to the guys we already have. I mean, was tremendous last year for us, and, you know, Bearclaw had a tremendous year, and I'm really happy we brought back, you know, McGowan, because that guy did so much for us. He saved the bullpen in so many different ways last year, just going out there and pitching in any situations.
All right, Tom, you personally, 33 starts last season, a career high in that regard. A little good and a little bad here. In what area of your game did you think you were able to elevate last season, and what is it you'd like to work on and improve on headed into 2017?
I had a really good stretch after the All-Star break, and I'd like to build off that and focus mostly on that 7 or 8-start stretch. You know, to me, I don't really focus much on the individual goals. To me, if I'm out there every fifth day, it's something that puts the manager's mind at ease. He doesn't have to worry about who's pitching or what he's going to get that day. So I just would like to just do a little bit of a better job of finishing. Just, you know, if you've got six or five or 5 2/3 solid, finish it out for a six or seventh inning and just keep giving your team a chance to win. Just be out there and you know, so I just feel the game that went poorly for me last year was done away by either one pitch or one bad sequence that started the ball rolling. So just making sure that the focus is there, no matter who's up or who's on base, or just executing the best pitch I can at that time.
Marlins starting pitcher Tom Kohler joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Well, I know how silly this question can be. It's only January 9th, but Tom, you always provide great insight to us. The loss of Jose hurts, no doubt about it, but how close do you think this ball club is to competing for a championship and playing deep into October?
Yeah, the loss of Jose is huge. You can't replace that. We're not going to, you can't replace a guy that pitches to close to a sub-2 every time out there and every year, but
right.
I think we're close. And I think now it's kind of the time we have to do it. We've been talking about it for years. Our young players aren't young and inexperienced anymore.
Right.
Our position players have done it. We've got, an all-star in center field, or we got an all-star now, I guess, in left field, and we got an all-star in right field, and we got a guy representing the United States in the World Baseball Classic playing center for us. We've got a tremendous outfield. Our position player core is there. The offense is there. The guys just got to stay healthy. We're not going to just be able to plug guys in and keep the momentum going. But as long as our starting eight, our position players are out there and they're healthy, we can compete with everybody. And everybody in the rotation is going to have to step up because we took a huge hit. But at the same time, I don't think we can go into it trying to fill a void. I'm not going to go out there trying to pitch to a 1.5 ERA. I'm going to go out there and try to give the team everything I got. And then when Donnie tells me I'm done, I'm going to hand it off to one of the great guys in the bullpen. And hopefully we're winning at the time because I feel pretty comfortable that if we're winning by the time I give the ball away, I'm probably going to get a win. So I think we're right there. It's going to have to – everything's going to have to work, though. We're a couple – one or two injuries away from really having to grind. So I think if health is our biggest factor this year. We need to all stay healthy.
It'll be 5 years on September 5th that you debuted in Major League Baseball. Out of curiosity, Tom, how fast has it gone? And do you try to take some time, whether it's in the offseason or I guess maybe even in the regular season, for that matter, to reflect and all soak it in? I'm sure it can be hard during the regular season, but...
Yeah, during the regular season, it's tough because I pitch, and then the next day I'm already gearing up for my next start and getting ready for it. So you don't really have time to sit there and reflect on what's going on. I look back and realize how fortunate I was after the unfortunate circumstances with Jose at the end of the season. And it kind of made me realize that I do need to appreciate this a little bit more and enjoy the fact that, this is going to be my sixth season in the big leagues, and there's not a lot of people that get to say that. So yeah. I'm in a very fortunate group of people. And I do need to appreciate a little more. I'm sitting in my memorabilia room in my house right now, so I get to see my jersey from my first start, my line of card from my first win. And, I look at those and see the guys that were either in our lineup or the other team's lineup, and it's pretty surreal. I hopefully can look back 10 years from now and say, man, that's played 15 years, and that was some experience. But, hope, never know what's going to happen.
All right, just a couple more minutes with Marlins starting pitcher Tom Kohler here on the Hot Stove Show tonight. Tom, out of curiosity, as advanced as the game has become and the use of technology and its accessibility, who do you think benefits more in today's age, a pitcher or a hitter?
I don't know. Everybody's got every piece of information. I've got sheets of paper that tell me hot or cold, what a guy's going to do, and they've got every count percentage of pitch I'm going to throw, versus every with the spin rates and all this. But it all comes down to execution.
Right.
I can know a guy's hitting 100 on fastball down and away. If I try to throw it down and away and it comes back in the middle, he's still going to hit it.
Right.
Same goes for them. So you have all the information you want, if you can't execute with that information, it's pretty useless.
Well, I fear we are headed this way. I would hate to see it. How would you feel about a computer calling balls and strikes?
I hate that idea.
Right.
Absolutely hate it. And it's one of those things, like, it seems great in theory, but how are people going to feel when guys are bouncing curveballs in the dirt, but they cross the invisible strike zone, and now they're getting called strikes?
Right. Or you miss by one inch on the outside part of the plate, and it's called a ball.
Right. I mean, I go in, and I see fox tracks or other things where I've bounced curveballs before, and they're called strikes. And you get a guy like Clayton Kershaw, who has a big sweeping curveball. He can do it all day. It's just going to teach pitchers how to use that. You know, honestly, there's more pitchers. This is a little tidbit of information. There's more pitchers in the strike zone called balls than there are out of the strike zone called strikes.
Right.
And to me, you're eliminating a position. You know, gone are the defensive specialist catchers, the guys who can really sell pitches. I mean, Jeff Mathis or our newly signed AJ Ellis would have careers if there was a robotic umpire back there.
Yeah.
So to me, it just doesn't make much sense. Like I understand you want the calls right, and I know in the World Series with the every time they have the K zone on the TV, it drives me crazy because those aren't accurate.
Right.
They're not. They don't change based on the size of the player, and so you see things that are called strikes that might be outside the zone, but they might actually be strikes because the guy's a certain height. I don't like it.
Hey, on the way out the door here, just a couple more questions after this. How much of an impact did Don Mattingly have on you and your teammates last season and his first season in Miami?
I think the thing that was great about Donnie was he was just calm every day. And he told us from day one, I expect to win every day. I want you guys to play hard. And if you do that, there'll be no issues. And, you know, there was in-house stuff where he had to come in and let guys know he wasn't appreciating how certain things were going on. But if you follow that, if you went out there and you played hard and tried to win every day, then, you know, Donnie would have your back and he would know that you bought into what he was saying. And it was just a nice calming presence. And I think he brought the best out of some guys because they were able to just relax and try to win instead of focusing on other things. I mean, there was one time early in the year, we took out of the game after five innings and we had a big lead and I wanted to keep pitching. And he just called me in the office the next day and said, look, like, don't worry about when I take you out or whatnot. Just try to be out there and try to have a lead when you're done and let us take care of the rest. Just worry about winning. And, you know, I think if you get 25 guys just that buy into winning and winning only, that's when special things start to happen. So that's why I think we're getting closer to where we need to be because there's not any personal agendas. Everybody just wants to win.
On the way out, on a light note, Tom, two remaining questions for you. Number one, we'll put you on the spot. The funniest teammate you've ever been around.
Oh. Funniest teammate ever.
I'll say this too: the guys I've asked, they've floated your name out there a little bit.
Oh, that's not good.
How funny is Ichiro?
Oh, there you go. Thank you. I don't know why I drew such a blank. he's hysterical. I'm not gonna share some of the conversations we've had, but that guy makes me laugh on a regular basis and. Prado's up there too.
Mm.
Prado. He, you know, everybody sees him with his low brim when he walks on the field, all nice, and slow, and methodical, like everything's planned out. But you catch him in the dugout or in the clubhouse. That guy's a character.
All right,
I'm trying to find out how Rojas, that funny Rojas, is by reading his trash talking fantasy football text messages.
Right, that's the new fantasy football champion in the Marlins clubhouse. All right, Tom, last one. All right, when Derek Dietrich walked off that game last year and his shirt came off immediately, and he was loving every minute of it, you and your teammates were thinking what?
Unbelievable! Of all people to have their shirt ripped off,
he loved it.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if he has a 30x35 roll up stat head on his wall of that moment. Somewhere in his house. Like that was the perfect. That was better than the walk-off hit. for that day. I mean, that's what we're all thinking. Like, you know, this guy's waited for this moment his whole life.
Yeah, he could have retired right then.
Being on a baseball field with no shirt on in front of, you know, 30,000 people and then getting seen on ESPN or MLB Network, that was it. That was the bucket list item.
Yep, he absolutely loved it. Tom, you're the man. Great chatting with you, and we'll see you in just over a month up in Jupiter. Thanks for the time tonight. Coming up next, we'll recap the Marlins' winter to date and what moves may lie ahead for the Fish right here on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
This is where the Marlins play.
It is up and away, a long home run.
940 Wins, Miami Sports, home of the Marlins.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. A big thank you to Tom Kohler for joining us this evening. Always great to chat with Tom. Oh, man, a straight shooter, a guy that's always accessible. And I'll tell you what, he's a guy that has quickly become a leader inside the Marlins clubhouse, whether it's him personally, bad outings, good outings. He's always there standing in front of his locker postgame. Whether it was an issue or something that took place during a game, whatever the case may be, you can always kind of count on Tom Kohler. You can always go over to his locker in the clubhouse, and always very, very accessible. Again, he's certainly become a leader inside the Marlins clubhouse and a part of the organization. A guy terrific in the community as well, so always great to chat with Tom, and we thank him for his time this evening. Now, before we chat with Brad Ziegler this evening, one of the newest Marlins who signed a two-year deal right before Christmas, here's a snippet from Brian Kenny, Bill Ripken, and Eric Burns on MLB Network on the additions to the Marlins' bullpen this offseason.
The Marlins, though, first bulking up their bullpen late last week, Junichi Tozawa. And lately, Brad Ziegler, 2 years, $16 million. He's going into his age 37 season. He was sixth in ground ball rate last year. You know, he's a strange guy, and Eric, we were talking about him earlier, where his FIP is not great. That's fielding independent pitching, means he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. His whip is not great, which means he puts on a lot of base runners. But I don't know, you don't allow runs. That's pretty good. Look at this. Since the start of 2011, only Clayton Kershaw has a better ERA. Your thoughts first on Ziegler, and have we kind of undervalued this guy?
I don't think there's any doubt we've undervalued that guy. I mean, minimum 400 innings pitched. That's a large enough sample size for us to sit back and marvel at. I think the thing is, though, is that you got to get over the fact that, number one, he's 37 years old. Number two, he throws from underneath. Now, I really feel like within the past 5-10 years, there's been a shift. And we now value a Brad Ziegler now more than we ever have before because of the results, because we see the results. Now, the strikeouts aren't necessarily where they would want to be, and there is a value to the strikeout and having a guy not be able to put a ball in play. But he has proven year in and year out that he's able to get the job done. And he has a devastating sinker that will get both lefties and righties out.
Bill. Yeah, and BK, you talked about the ground ball rate. And part of it is gravity gets a hold of him. You know, he's not throwing 95, 97 miles an hour. It's coming in with that little movement right there and throwing down under. 37 shouldn't bother you with a guy that, what's going to throw 60, 70, 80 innings at tops in a season. The age shouldn't bother you whatsoever. And if you do give up a hit and you give up that many ground balls, you got the pitcher's second best friend, the 6-4-3 double play waiting for you. You get two outs for the price of one with one pitch.
He does that a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he will execute his pitches. What do you think of the Marlins' MO here with what they're doing? Obviously, the tragedy of Jose Fernandez, yeah, best starting pitcher, is gone. Now they're bulking up that bullpen. There's already some good arms in there. What do you think of what they seem to be trying to do here?
Well, I get it, but you also sit there, and they haven't made a move for me to say, okay, I'm going to challenge the Nationals or the New York Mets, for that matter. Mm-hmm. I like the club. I like what they did last year. I misjudged them last year and said they need to stay 100% healthy. Everybody has to stay out there on the field for them to be good. That didn't necessarily happen. A couple guys were out of the lineup. They missed some people, and they still got it done. So I think they're a good club, but they haven't made that one move yet to say, okay, Nationals and Mets, look out.
All right, that'll provide for a nice little bridge headed into our next segment when we give Brad Ziegler a call. But let's chat for a couple of minutes about where the Marlins stand right now. So the bullpen seems to be settled and situated But Joe Fusaro, our good friend, Marlins beat reporter, I brought up a good conversation, and he brought up a good question in regards to Jose Ureña. Ureña, folks, out of options. If he doesn't make the team out of spring training, the Marlins would risk losing the young, hard-throwing right-hander who has had some success in the big leagues. Now, the starting rotation seems to be filled out. So, would the Marlins carry Ureña in the pen so they don't lose him? That means they'd be shorthanded on the bench. Or do they take their chances and hope someone doesn't pick him up and send him back to the minor leagues? That's going to be a big question. Now, I will say this. It's something my good friend, my mentor, and our very own Glenn Geffner told me a few years back, and it couldn't be more true. Everything always works out. Injuries happen. Things take place. Quite frankly, one injury in camp to a starter or a reliever, no matter how moderate or severe the injury is, could quickly solve that dilemma with Ureña. Now, but that being said, too, he could absolutely kill it this spring, and then the Marlins have to make some decisions to make on another guy, potentially. Elsewhere on the Marlins roster, they still appear to be in need of a veteran right-handed bat off the bench that can also complement Justin Bour at first base. Some of those names, five free agent names, again, per our good friend Joe Fusaro of MLB.com. The first two familiar with the Marlins organization. The first being Chris Johnson. He hit .222, five home runs, 24 RBIs for the Marlins last season. He appeared in 113 games. The big problem, however, if you don't want Bour facing lefties, you want Chris Johnson to face lefties. He hit just .212 with three home runs and 12 RBIs against lefties last season. So that's a bit of a dilemma on that front. As for the next guy, he was acquired by the Marlins in late August from the Braves, Jeff Francoeur. A presence in 16 games. He hit .280. He kind of fits that profile against left-handers. It sounds like he is open to playing first base. Had that slash line, .271, .313, .414, four home runs, 19 RBIs against lefties last season. So a .270 hitter just north of that against lefties last season certainly would be an improvement from Chris Johnson. Now, some wild cards. How about this name? Chase Utley. It might be a tempting alternative. 38 years old. He played for Don Mattingly with the Dodgers. He appeared in 138 games last season, hit .252, 14 home runs, 52 RBIs. He did struggle against lefties. He hit just .254 in his career. He's hit .254, 70 of his 250 home runs against lefties. But that's kind of a wild card. We'll see. That's certainly a name that's out there, potentially Chase Utley. Then again, you got to hope he hits lefties. Next, second to last, Mark Reynolds. He's shown some power, 251 career home runs, 33 years old. Certainly a bit limited defensively, but you might be able to hide him of sorts over there at first and to complement Bour at first base. Last but not least, don't know about this name simply because he might be better suited to play in the American League and be a designated hitter because he is limited at first base. That would be Chris Carter. He's coming off a 41 home run season with the Milwaukee Brewers. He has yet to sign. Not sure if the Marlins have serious interest. That 41 home run season last season, it did come with a .224 batting average. He strikes out a lot, but his on-base percentage is .321. So he strikes out a lot, but he gets on base a lot. Sensational power. Just not too sure if Chris Carter would be a fit with the Marlins. But, hey, you never know. There's still a lot of time left, so we'll have to see how that plays out. So the Marlins still active on the free agent market as we get closer to spring training. Still some questions to be answered. Speaking of questions, a bunch of them coming up next when Brad Ziegler, the Marlins' newest newcomer in the bullpen, joins us right here on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
Your Miami Marlins play here. 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. A great first half of the program. A big thank you to Tom Kohler, as always. And guess what? Before we wrap things up, joining us tonight, one of the newest members of the Marlins, a 9-year big league veteran and a guy that just continues to fool people at the plate when he comes on in relief. It is my pleasure now to welcome on Brad Ziegler, who signed a 2-year deal with the Marlins just before Christmas. Brad, welcome to the show. Happy New Year. Thanks so much for the time tonight. I'm sure that 2-year deal was a nice way to start the holiday season.
Yeah, it was. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and Happy New Year to you as well. Obviously, my family and I are pretty excited. There's a lot of great things about the Miami area, and we're excited to get down there and explore them together as a family. But also a good young, you know, exciting baseball team that you know we're hoping to you know be part of the push to help put them over the edge and get this team in the playoffs.
Well, let's start with that free agent process. What led you to the Marlins amongst your decisions that needed to be made and to join this ball club? And what have you seen out of this young group?
They were on me from the start of the winter meetings until the deal got done. They were without question the most persistent team. They you know, even though there were reports of them being interested in other relievers, they said they were very adamant. Look, even if something were to get done with these other guys, don't take that as a fact that we don't want you. You know, we are still, you know, still very interested. So they were very adamant that I was a target for them in the offseason. And that was, you know, that was, I kind of likened the free agent process to kind of being recruited to college. And they were, you know, very persistent. Like I said, definitely the team that showed the most interest. And because of that, it was easy to build a connection with them and kind of see myself going there, because it's nice to go to a place where you end up, you know, feeling wanted and liked there. as far as the team goes, I mean, obviously there's a ton of offensive and defensive talent. Should be a pretty good bullpen. I know the additions they've made in the starting pitching. It's going to be, you know, there's no way to replace Jose for sure. And I know that's going to be a pretty big focal point this year with the attention that it will draw throughout the season. But at the same time, you know, Edinson Volquez is a pretty good pitcher. You know, Jeff Locke obviously is a good veteran starter, lefty. They've got other guys. You know, there's enough arms there that, without question, to compete, especially if everybody can take a step forward and kind of go to that next level. And hopefully the rest of the team holds up our end of the bargain, and everything will fall into place.
Brett, I don't want to get too deep into it, but you had mentioned Jose, and obviously we've chatted with Michael Hill and Marlins president David Sampson, among some players, Don Mattingly as well. But for a guy coming in from the outside when that transpired last September, can you shed some light for us what it was like just being in other clubhouses, hearing that news, not necessarily a member of the Marlins team at the time?
Yeah, it was shocking. I was with Boston at the time, Tampa, playing the Rays on the Sunday morning when I, you know, getting ready to go to the park, and the ESPN alert comes across my phone and says, you know, Jose Fernandez killed in the boating accident. And I was just like, did I just read that right? Like, there's no way. And then we get to the park, and of course, any press conference or MLB Network, any news about it, that was what was on the TV there. And right. It was very solemn. It was very, it was tough to get any emotion going that day prior to the game, because that was kind of all everybody was thinking about. And, you know, David Ortiz, has been such a huge member of the Latin community in baseball. And, you know, a guy that all the Latin players look up to,
right.
And he took it especially hard, and just kind of knowing, I think he knew Jose pretty well, and it was rough for him and Hanley too. You know, Hanley Ramirez was, it took it pretty hard as well. Yeah. And so, it was tough watching those guys go through the emotions that they had. And, you know, it was just another one of those reminders that there's so much more to life than baseball. And, it was hard to go out and play on the field that day. And, you know, fortunately from the Marlins standpoint, everybody like just loved seeing the way they bounced back on that next game. And, with D hitting the leadoff homer and getting that win, it was such an emotional night. And, you know, I think everybody around baseball, just, you know, as part of that brotherhood, just kind of felt, this is something that, we all, even though we may or may not have known him personally, may or may not have ever been teammates with him, but you still feel kind of like an emptiness whenever something like that happens. And, it's tough.
Yeah, we were chatting with Christian Yelich earlier this evening, and, you know, he said it happened so late in the season, we're not too sure what those first couple days of spring will be, but he said with like anything else, you got to move on. All right, Brett, 37 years old now. You've appeared in the postseason twice. Let me ask you, as it pertains to your decision to join the Marlins organization, how much does that play in a factor that, yes, I think these guys at this stage of my career give me the best opportunity to win a championship?
That was a big factor. Obviously, there were other contenders. Most of the non-contenders are not going to be interested in a 37-year-old reliever. So there were other contenders that had shown some interest. Ultimately, I'm looking at it from a baseball perspective, from a family perspective. Mm-hmm. It was kind of hard on me last year to get traded midseason and be away from my family for the rest of the year. They weren't going to move, all the way across country for the last couple months of the season and with the two young kids. And then, it would have presented a really big challenge. So, I'm looking at it from the perspective, like, I want to go to a team that's contending so that I won't be traded again. And that's, that was a lot of my thought process going into it is contending team was going to be, a deal breaker for me if it came down to, choosing between one team or another. And I definitely felt like this Marlins team is, I mean, you look up and down the lineup and, mm-hmm. As an outsider that's played against them a little bit, but just kind of watching a little bit, there's a ton of talent on this team. And if you kind of feel like they're all young enough where everybody's ready to kind of take that next step as a group and maybe be the Cleveland Indians of 2017.
Right. Well, you've seen a lot of this league, a very unorthodox delivery. I'm sure folks that have watched you pitch on the mound in relief. What is it that makes you so successful, though?
Having a good defense behind me is a really good start. And, that was obviously, one of the factors when I look at, D at second and Hetchy at short and Martin at third. I played with Martin a little bit in Arizona and just knowing those three guys, that's the three infielders that they tend to get a lot of action whenever I'm pitching. And if I'm executing, getting my ball down in the zone, they're getting a lot of work. And when you see how good a fielder those guys are and the range that they have, the ground that they cover on the infield, it's exciting to think of getting to play. I've been fortunate enough to play with a bunch of really good defenses behind me in my career, and this athletically, this might be the most talented that I will have played against or played with, in my entire career. So I'm looking forward to that possibility for sure.
How much have you had to adapt over the years? You're not a guy that'll overpower people. What do you do to create an edge of sorts, especially in today's day and age when there's so much information and analytical measures of sorts available?
I don't know. I mean, I've had to evolve a little bit. I've when I first came up, I had a changeup that I was pretty comfortable with against lefties, and then I kind of lost it my second and third year in the big leagues, and ended up having to change grips and go to something that was it's actually the same grip now that I used when I was an overhand pitcher prior to converting to submarine. So that's made me a lot more effective against lefties the last couple of years. In addition to that, this last year I started throwing it a lot more to righties and had pretty good success there. So getting that third pitch, and feeling confident to throw any pitch in any count is something even though I had some success as a younger pitcher, I didn't have the confidence to throw any pitch in any count. And now I definitely do. I'm not afraid to throw whatever, whenever, and I'm not afraid to pitch the contact. And, if I give up a hit now and then, that's not a problem for me because a lot of times my thought process is, okay, I'm going to try to get another ground ball and hopefully it's right at our shortstop and we turn two and I'm out of the inning.
Who did you seek out when you were transitioning from going from an overhand pitcher to a submarine pitcher? I mean, that's not easy to do and still maintain a Major League Baseball career.
No, the Oakland A's came to me. I had reached AAA as a starter, and they came to me at the end of the 2006 season and asked about converting. And our pitching coordinator was Ron Romanek. And I believe he's the Mets pitching coordinator, at least he was last year now. So he he watched a lot of video on Chad Bradford. And initially, whenever I first started, I was throwing, literally releasing the ball ankle high, just as low as I could get without scraping my hand on the ground. But the velocity that they were looking for out of my slot there wasn't there. I was throwing, high 70s, touching 80, 81. And they said, look, we need to free your hips up a little more. You're not getting the explosion that you had when you were an overhand pitcher. Try bringing the ball up a little closer to knee height. And that's where I kind of started my career, was releasing the ball about my knee. And now as I've gotten a little older, I think my slot's probably come up a little bit, but I've been able to, manipulate the ball, grab different grips and figure out some stuff to keep the ball down, get some sink on it, no matter what arm slot I'm in.
Brad Ziegler, one of the newest Marlins, joining us here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Brad, your role with the Marlins this season, are you comfortable both closing and setting up? Is that an easy thing for you to do if you were to do one on Tuesday and the next on Wednesday type of deal?
Yeah, I think so. And this is something that Donnie and I talked about a little bit after I signed I really don't care what my role is on the team. I'll be the fifth, sixth inning guy if that's what they want me to do, as long as I kind of have a little bit of a heads up, ahead of time, what my role is going to be that night. Mm-hmm. And that way, the biggest thing for me is, being 37, I can't just, sit cold on the bench for seven innings and then pop up and start firing balls and be ready to go in 45 seconds like I could whenever I was, 28 and first breaking into the league. So, if I have a little time to get loose, stretch, get limbered up a little bit, then at that point, I don't care what my role is. And he told me, he said, that's not going to be a problem. I think he prides himself in communicating with this team and especially with this bullpen and making sure everybody's on the same page before the game starts. So that way when the phone rings, if you can look down and kind of know when the phone rings, I think it's going to be either this guy or this guy. That's a big deal for a bullpen to kind of have an idea of who it's going to be, instead of all seven or eight guys wondering, is it me? Is it me? And when you can mentally start preparing before the phone even rings, it really helps as far as just getting ready once you're on the mound. You've already got the mental preparation done. Now you just got to get a little sweat going.
Brad, both yourself and Junichi Tozawa are now Marlins. I know you're obviously very familiar with Tozawa from last year in Boston. For fans that may be wondering, who is this guy? What's he going to bring to the table? Can you shed some light for us as his personality as well as what we'll see on the mound in a game situation?
Yeah, he's a guy who, he's pretty low-key, doesn't talk a whole lot. Very nice guy, he's very personable when you do talk to him. At the same time, I think this is it's an awesome trait of a lot of Japanese players that they all keep their emotions in check pretty well. Mm-hmm. I've always, Veritek always talked about that with Daisuke and I see a lot of the same things in Taz and he was so solid for the Red Sox for a lot of years. I think he just kind of wore down a little bit toward the end of last season. Wasn't getting to pitch a lot, and it was hard for him to kind of stay sharp, when he's only pitching once a week or every 10 days or so. So I think now that he's got a whole off season to kind of, get refreshed, get rejuvenated and come back in and get into a situation where he's going to be used a lot more frequently. I think he's going to thrive, especially, in a good pitcher's park to pitch in like Miami is.
Speaking of some of those Japanese players, Brad, you didn't break into the league until you were 28 in 2008. You'll be playing with a guy by the name of Ichiro this season. How exciting is that?
It's awesome. Obviously he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I'm a guy I played against him a lot when he was in Seattle and I was in Oakland to start my career. So, we go back a long ways and I think it's a very respectful relationship we have on the field, and it's going to be awesome to be in the same locker room with him and get to witness history every single time he steps to the plate.
You didn't break into the big leagues. I just mentioned it till you were 28, but you've pitched in at least 60 games each of the past eight seasons. You're the only pitcher in the big leagues who's done that. A career 2.44 ERA, that ranks eighth amongst relievers since 2008. How do you keep your body in such good shape and ready to throw nearly half the games throughout the course of the regular season? You mentioned as you get older in age now, it's not as easy every given night.
Sure, and after I had microfracture surgery on my left knee in 2014, so it's been a little, I've had to make some adjustments even since then. One thing is I feel like I've been very blessed with a body that for the most part is pretty loose and limber, a lot of the pitchers that tend to get hurt sometimes are guys that are kind of muscle strapped, and that's definitely not me. You can wrap a ruler around my bicep and probably still have several inches to spare. So it's just one of those things where, I've always just kind of had a throwing program that worked for me. I'm essentially on the same program. Like my long toss program and everything is the same as it was when I was a starter, in the minor leagues, all the way dating back to 2004, 2005. When I first signed with Oakland. So, It's a program that works for me, and it allows me to be ready to go almost every night, and still be able to bounce back the next day and be able to go 2-3 nights in a row if they need me.
Just a couple more minutes, couple more questions with one of the newest Marlins relievers, Brad Ziegler, right here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. You know, Brad, when you first joined us this evening, you said something pretty interesting. You were talking about, obviously, family being important, and you're going to spend as much time with them as you can before you go to spring training. You know, so often fans see big league players, and they're like, well, they're making millions of dollars. What's it matter if they get traded in July? You know, they've got these million-dollar homes. They go back to their families. All is well. How hard is it, Brad, when you get traded and when you got to leave your family? It's a side of the game that I don't think many people realize.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging. When I first got traded from Oakland to Arizona, I wasn't married. So it was a lot easier to just pick up and move. I was engaged at the time. My fiance's at the time is now my wife. Her sister came and helped pack up my apartment in Oakland, and did it like after I'd already joined Arizona. She packed all my stuff up and sent it, and it was a piece of cake. And this time around, it's I've got two dogs. I've got two little kids. They're ages 1 and 2. They missed me quite a bit whenever I left, and I tried to Skype with them as much as I could, but they don't quite grasp the idea that, when they reach up their hands and say, "Daddy, hold me," that I can't pick them. I'm not actually standing right there. They don't grasp that at that age. And it's challenging because then whenever I don't pick them up, they start crying. And that's, it's tough as a parent to feel like in some ways, from an emotional standpoint, you're kind of letting your kids down a little bit. At the same time, it is the business side of the game. And as a player, that's always a possibility, especially, being a relief pitcher. Relief pitchers get traded a ton every year during the season. So it's just one of the things you kind of sign up for, and you try to prepare for it as best you can. And, we had a pretty good idea that I was going to get traded last year. It just it happened a little sooner than we anticipated. Just, it was July 9th, I believe, so it was pretty early before the deadline. And so that was about the only thing that caught us off guard last year, was just, that it was before the All-Star break and not sometime approaching the deadline. But we had a plan in place, and we tried our best to figure it out the rest of the year. But like I said, it's something that I wanted to go to a contender going forward and just hope that I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Hey, Brad, on the way out the door here, kind of a two-part question for you. But first and foremost, upon making your decision to come to Miami, how enticing was it to pitch inside the spacious Marlins Park? And on top of that, you spent your entirety of your career in either the American League or the National League West. Do you think making this switch to the National League East and some guys that are not as familiar with you will give you an advantage at all this season?
Maybe for a game or so. I don't, guys, like you mentioned earlier, guys are very in depth with video research and statistical analysis and stuff now. There's not a whole lot you can do to fool guys anymore. I think a lot of it just kind of boils down to execution. So, hopefully I can still keep executing pretty consistently and trust that great defense behind me, and I'll be, I'll feel pretty good about it. And for the most part, I try not to get too much into thinking about what ballpark I'm in. Ideally, because I'm getting the ball on the ground the majority of the time, and if that's the case, the infield's the same size in every park.
Right.
And so if I do get a ball up in the air, obviously the last two teams I played in Arizona for essentially six seasons, Boston the last 3 months of last season, those are two pretty hitter friendly ballparks. And so if you do get the ball up in the air there, it's tough to have good results as a pitcher. Early on in my career in Oakland, I think the ballpark helped me a lot because I was still kind of learning the submarine delivery a little bit and wasn't as effective at getting the ball on the ground as I would like to be. But I was, fortunate to, in the nighttime in Oakland, the ball doesn't carry a whole lot. So I was fortunate to give up some deep fly balls that in Arizona and Boston might've been, a little different result. That being said, the defense and the infield defense especially, but even the outfield defense is so good with Miami that I feel pretty confident that I'm just going to attack hitters, going to, let them put the ball in play like they always have. And, if I need to get a strikeout, I'll try to go for one, but that's, ideally I'm getting, getting two or three outs in about, 10 pitches or less. And and using my defense to do it, and this is a really good one behind me.
Brad, welcome to Miami, man. We cannot wait to see you in a Marlins uniform. Thanks so much for the time tonight, and we will see you, and we'll meet you in Jupiter in just a couple of weeks. Ah, a lot of fun tonight on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Big thank you to Tom Kohler and Brad Ziegler. Next week, Christian Yelich joins the program. That'll do it for us here at 940 Wins tonight. For Mike Lukomiak, our terrific producer, I'm Kyle Seeloff saying so long. You've been listening to the Marlins Hot Stove Show on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
The Miami Marlins play here. WINC, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, 940 Wins, an iHeartRadio station.